Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
You know, earlier we talked about, earlier in the year, when President Barack Obama made this statement, because what we tried to do is like, yeah, we could just tell you, you know, they're calling names, the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, they're calling him terrible names right now, and they've been doing it for quite some time, leaders in the White House. Or we can actually tell you the whole story and the context of it. We talked about that God uses Israel as the woodshed to be able to discipline a nation who rebels against him. Well, why is this happening? Why is our leadership turning against Israel? Well, think about this. It all began specifically with Israel when our president made the statement sometime back, and you can see it on the VFN Torch, he said that Israel should go back to the 1967 borders, mm-hmm. which are undefensible borders, which the only reason they have extended their borders between after 1967 is because they were attacked with those kind of borders. And so they had, and we'll make this available to you. We may even have it on the program today. Ever how goes Israel? Understand, if we turn our back on Israel, God is going to deeply, deeply discipline, you know, the nation. And we are. I mean, the leaders are. And the leaders in America are not some people who just came in to be dictators. They're people that your neighbor or possibly you voted for or failed to vote for the mm-hmm. ones who weren't them. And so that is voting. And so what do we have today? We have the very same battle happening in Israel happening in America and Canada. I mean, mm-hmm. you look with the radical Islam, they're calling it, which is Islamic fundamentalists that are following the Quran, that even, I think her name is Rahe Raza in Canada, she's part of a president of the Council of Muslims Facing Tomorrow. She says that they need a reformation inside Islam. Well, if you need a reformation, it means, based on my understanding, what everybody's doing is right, but we got to change that so right's better than it presently is, because right now is not right. Mm. That's what reformation, you know, you're going to mm-hmm. reform this thing.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And, but thank God she's speaking out. As a matter of fact, hopefully we're going to have a big specific part of her speaking out today. She stands up for the prime minister. She is a Muslim, and she's saying what is happening is like Ebola with radical Islam, and you have to deal with it like mm-hmm. Ebola. And if you stop having people come into your nation who has this disease called radical Islam, then you can contain it in your own nation, and then you can remove it from your nation. She has an open letter to all of Israel, including to mosques and Muslims in Canada, saying, you know, we need to bring this out of our country. She's not saying taking Islam out or moving Muslims out, but this thing needs to be reformed. Right. This is wrong. This is evil. She mm-hmm. calls it barbaric. So you'll have her talking. That's what we've been praying for. We've been praying for Muslims, you know, the silent majority is irrelevant. She's not mm-hmm. being silent. And she's giving she wrote an open letter, I think 10 things what Canada needs to do to remove it from the radical murdering, beheading evilness of ISIS, you know, and all that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. It's really common sense, but it's really good to hear somebody say it, you know, and the Muslim faith. And she's asked the question, what do you think about America and how they're not responding to it the way that Canada's responding to it? And so you'll be encouraged. Department of Homeland Security will be talking about Fox News reports that we are upping our security for all of our federal buildings. Why? Because we're not dealing mm-hmm. with this whole radical Islamic movement that's taking place in the world. And she says, and you'll hear her when she talks, and we've talked about this, that the whole theme, because the question was, what do you think about them wanting to take over Israel? She says, it's not just Israel. They want to take over the world. Mm-hmm. And that it's wrong, mm-hmm. and we need reformation. We need to say it's wrong. This silent majority of Muslims need to stand up and say something about it. And she says that is the theme of the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. This is a Muslim, a leader in Canada, who says that's the theme of the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, you understand if you've been listening to VFN TV or VFN Radio that we've partnered with, mm-hmm. our leaders have partnered with the Muslim Brotherhood. We are the ones that helped put Morsi in his place in Egypt. You know, but prior to them, the Egyptians going, what are you doing? This is the brotherhood. You know, we're the one that gave our first international speech in Cairo. The President Obama did, and invited in the illegal operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood, reportedly, and painted a picture of why they need to be able to do it. We're seeing this Arab Spring go across in this potential caliphate, and this ISIL, which is the Levant, coming surrounding Israel there. All those things that we talked about. So she's saying, as a Muslim, saying that the Muslim Brotherhood is like the epicenter of all this, and their goal is to not just take over Israel, but to take over the whole world. And specifically, she's going to speak about the Western world, which means America and Canada, and to bring a caliphate. So whether our president knows it or not, he's openly partnered with, according to Michelle Bachmann, according to Congressman Michelle Bachmann, what she's revealed with, including Hillary Clinton, you know, with her assistant, you know, Uma.
Uma, yeah.
And which is a daughter of leaders in the Muslim Brotherhood who are now passed, her father is. And for some reason, our leaders are thinking, you know, let's just get this partner with the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, if their ultimate goal is a caliphate and to rule the world, and
that's not good.
And America has a history of picking tyrants to be over people. You know, it's like this tyrant will be over this one, this tyrant will be over this nation here because these people won't listen. So we kind of fuel this whole, you know, because they're so wild, let's get a tyrant. And it's like they're trying to pick one huge tyrant organization called, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood potentially to just oppress a people. You cannot have the U.S. Constitution and a caliphate. I mean, you got to make up your mind, you know, what you're going to have.
Right.
And so we'll be hearing that. And that's why they're upping security around. Right now, when you go to your federal courthouse and you go to your federal buildings, they're upping security because they saw what happened in Canada, and they're believing this very same thing could be possibly happening in America. And she gives the rudiments of how to be able to eradicate it, which is just, it's very, very encouraging. And it's almost a 10-minute interview. Wow. And we want you to be able to hear that because who says it better than somebody who is in it, who says this part of us is wrong and we need to deal with it, we need to reform it. Reports are that from The Atlantic, from Jeffrey Goldberg, that the White House, some of the leaders in the White House have been name-calling Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for quite some time. He's been writing down all the names that they've called Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And just this week, October 28th or so, the article states in the Atlantic that they literally called Prime Minister chicken manure. And I'm not using the word that they used. You have to understand, when all these things we're talking about, you're seeing partnership with potentially with the Muslim Brotherhood, according to Congressman Michelle Bachmann. You're seeing the right-hand assistant to Hillary Clinton, daughter of the Muslim Brotherhood. You're seeing us empower the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. You're seeing you're about to hear from someone in Canada who is Muslim saying that they represent forcing the Middle East to move in this. Like, what? This is this whole thing. This is a wave of Islamic fundamentalism coming over America like a wave while we're trying to be politically correct and just waving all of our constitutional rights. And it's like, we have to pay attention, and you cannot attack Israel like this. You can't do that. I mean, you can do it, but you can't survive it. Even if you succeed for putting them in bondage for 70 years, in the end, God will deal with you, even if he used you as an oppressor to be able to deal with them for a while. And you wouldn't want that. As a matter of fact, I want you to hear right now, Rael Raza, president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. And she spells it out because they just had this attack in Canada. She's Canadian, and she's talking from a Canadian perspective. But it's so much wisdom is what she says. And the interviewer from CBN is talking to her about, you know, what do we need to do? What do you think about how we're responding to it? As a matter of fact, I want you to watch this and listen to it.
Thousands of Canadians gathered today to honor the fallen soldier, Corporal Nathan Cirillo. He was the victim of last week's terror attack in Ottawa. What is an appropriate response to this recent wave of Lone Ranger terrorist attacks in the West? One prominent Muslim in Canada is speaking out, suggesting that a harsher response is needed at this time. So joining us via Skype from Canada is Raheel Raza. She's an award-winning journalist and president of the Council of Muslims Facing Tomorrow. Raheel, thank you for being with us. You responded recently to that terrorist attack in Ottawa by writing an open letter of warning to all Canadians saying, your country's under attack. Now, why did you write that, and what is your concern?
Well, this is not something new. I have been speaking out about the rise of radicalization and terrorism in the West, especially in Canada, for the last decade, actually over a decade, and more so after 9/11. I wrote a book. I've been speaking out at interviews and saying that, you know, radicalization is on the rise and we need to be more vigilant. We need to be careful. Are we really going to wait until something happens on Canadian soil? Because as you know, among Western countries, Canada is a country that was relatively safe. Not so anymore. People call this a lone wolf, a lone attack. But if you connect the dots, it's not really so separate. It's not so lone. In 2006, we had 18 young men, Muslim men, who were apprehended for threatening to behead the prime minister. And since then, we have had terror attacks, and they, you know, they all connect because it is a rise in radicalization, and especially among the youth.
And so Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper did call last week's attack an act of terror, yet our own president here in the United States hesitated to call it that. Why the reluctance? What's the consequence of this reluctance to call it what it is?
Well, the consequence of reluctance to be politically correct and to call it, not call it what it is what results in events like 9/11. And, you know, we are thankful that we have Stephen Harper as our prime minister, who has called it what it is. There are still people saying that you should not call this terrorism. So what, do you have to wait for 30,000 people to die before you call it terrorism? Again, as I said, this is has to be seen in its entire context. The, you know, rise in radicalization, young Canadians being manipulated to go and fight the jihad in Syria and Iraq by ISIS. So there is something afoot which has been there for a long, long time. In the last 30 years, there has been a rise in radicalization.
Okay, and let's discuss some of the things that you say should be done. Now, you've called on the Canadian government to close all mosques for 3 months, monitor the sermons of the imams. What about religious freedom and freedom of speech in Canada? Where does that come in?
Well, I say that there, that, you know, it is to ensure religious freedom, because religious freedom should definitely never border on hate. Now, some of the sermons at the mosques and some of the writings by Muslim leaders do border on hate. And when you promote hate against another community and call them the other, I mean, the very country that you're living in, it makes it easy for people who are radicalized to attack that country. On the same blog where I have put this letter, I have also copied and pasted a sermon by a Canadian imam, a press release by a Canadian imam, and an article by a very big leader of the Muslim community, in which they say exactly this, that it's Canada's fault. So what happens when you keep on repeating this every Friday at mosque sermons is that the idea gets into young people's head that the West is bad and that it's okay to attack the West. And this is how this ideology has grown. So all I have suggested is that these sermons need to be monitored. And it's not just me saying it. There was a Washington Post article about 3 years ago proving that almost 80% of North American mosques have radicalized imams who are giving a sermon of hate and, you know, against what we call the other. So these need to be monitored. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, religious freedom will exist. It'll always be there. That's why I said 3 months. Muslim organizations need to have their finances monitored, including mine.
I was going to ask you about that, because I know that you also said in your letter that their donations need to be stated, where they're coming from. Islamic schools should be shut down if they're teaching hate. There should be a temporary moratorium on immigration from Muslim yes. countries and assurances that some Canadian men are not going to wage jihad and then come back and endanger Canada. It seems a bit extreme to some people. How have government officials and, of course, your fellow Muslims responded to this?
Well, in every way that you can imagine, but extreme times call for extreme measures. As I said, what are we going to do? Are we going to wait until there are more attacks? Are we going to wait until more Canadians are killed before we actually wake up and do this? You know, the Australian government today said that they're going to put a stop to entry into Australia from countries that are carrying the Ebola virus. Radicalization is a virus, and it needs to be treated as such. It is a virus, so if we close off the doors from where this virus is coming, perhaps we'll be able to contain some of the homegrown stuff that we have here. I mean, Canada has a lot of work to do. The Muslim communities have a lot of work to do, which means looking to see where this radicalization is coming from. And we can't do it if there are constantly people coming in from countries that are promoting terrorism, that are training people towards terrorism. So a moratorium does not mean completely closing immigration. It just says, let's clean up our house. Let's make sure that the guests who are coming into our home are not coming here to harm us. And for those who want to fight the jihad, we are more than willing to buy them one-way tickets to just go there and never come back. This is Canada. We feel secure here. This is our home. And we want to keep it safe and secure. And the only way we can do it is stand up and speak out and say that we have a problem within the Muslim communities of radicalization. And we need to take care of it. We need to solve that problem. And it is solvable.
And, of course, also being targeted by ISIS and other jihadists is Israel. Now, Sheikh Kamal Khatib, the deputy leader of the Islamic movement in Israel, earlier this month, said not only will Jerusalem become the capital of the Palestinian state, but also the capital of the coming Islamic caliphate. Do you agree with that or disagree?
Of course I disagree. But this idea of lashing out at Israel and wanting to take over the Islam, not only the entire Middle East, but the whole world, so to speak, is a dream that they have. And this is their vision. If you look at the mandate of the Muslim Brotherhood, that is exactly what it is, to infiltrate the West, weaken them from inside, and then, you know, ensure that these caliphates are put into place. So we have to protect ourselves. We have to make sure without resorting to hate or bigotry. That is never the solution. What happens, unfortunately, in times like this is that everybody who's frustrated and angry will lash out. And that's not what solves the problem. We have to do this through dialogue. We have to do this through working together as Canadians together, regardless of where we come from. And we have to do it with dignity and respect. But we must stand up and say that there is a problem. When 99% of the Muslim community is in denial, and also many Canadians are in denial because they don't like conflict, they don't want to call this a terrorist attack, they don't like sanctions being put on our freedoms. But as I said, extreme times call for extreme measures. If that is the only way to solve the problem, so be it. I'm supportive of Prime Minister Stephen Harper's initiatives to make sure that we are safe. And that is what every country needs to do.
And I think, Raheel, that many Americans actually applauded him calling it what it was, Islamic terrorism. And many people would see you as a voice that is a rare one, a much-needed response, what you're saying. Why do you think we don't see more collective condemnation of ISIS, terrorism, jihadists from the Middle East, Muslims? And why the reluctance here by Western governments and leaders to respond in the same manner that you've suggested for Canada?
Well, it's very difficult to face the truth and speak the truth. As far as politicians are concerned, they're looking for votes. And it's important to get those votes. As you said yourself, my voice is that of a minority. As far as the Muslim communities are concerned, they're in denial. And to accept that we have a problem means that we have to look within. We have to start talking about a reform.
So you're looking at sanity.
Wow.
You're looking at sanity, you know, and that's what we've been crying out for and asking for. And we know we've talked about the letter that was written by 100 and something, you know, Islamic scholars that renounce what's taking place in ISIS. But she's even more She's normal.
Yeah.
She's just saying, we don't want to die. We want to have a peaceful country. She's Canadian. Mm-hmm. And we get back from this break. We're going to talk a little bit about this Iman's letter. We'll make it available to you also on the VFN Torch. You need to share this post. You need to go to the VFN Torch and make it known to folks, because some of the things that are being said sounds like to us, you know, this is a violation of the First Amendment rights, but is the Constitution being used against us so it can be replaced by the caliphate? We have to understand some of those things. We had an interview with Rahil Raza, the president of the Council of Muslims Facing Tomorrow, and the most sane human comment about what's taking place in Canada, and who has socialized medicine, you know, who is still somewhat under the Queen. So all this stuff in America, we're talking about, you know, we're focusing on the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the church, we need to start focusing on love and repentance and treating people well and forgiveness and God and his way of doing things. And the God that we serve, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whose son he gave for us, Jesus Christ, his name is love, you know, and he's a merciful God, but he's a holy God. And when we start following him, I mean, he's radical. This is what a radical, you see what radical Islam's like. Radical Christianity's like this. When they punch Pat in one cheek, he turns the other cheek, right?
Mm-hmm.
Man, the camera crew's quick. It was like boom, duct tape. And then they, or when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I'm going to charge you 10% taxes, say, I'm going to pay you 20% taxes. No, that's not what he said. He said, when somebody says, carry my bag for a mile, offer to carry it for 2 miles. When a government employee tells you to carry their bag, when a soldier tells, that's what you had to do. Somebody, if a soldier in your country at that time said, carry my bag, wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that you had to carry it. That was a law, but you only had to carry it, I believe, 1 mile.
They had big bags.
But he's saying, you know, go beyond that. And so the truth, when we follow our king, when we're willing to give the sugar, to the cup of sugar to the neighbor who asks, we're willing to lend without expecting anything in return, when we're willing to lay down our life, that's the gospel. That wins. Hmm. It totally wins. But this political arguing and conservatism and, you know, Christian quote institutions who are polling folks are saying that Christians would prefer to be called conservatives than Christians. Christian means Christ follower.
Right.
And it's like, but if we follow him, then it really works out, because even you can go back and watch an interview in Iraq on Iraqi television where Muslims are saying, these Christians in our community, they should not be being beheaded and killed around their homes. They're like flowers in our community, and they're crying and weeping for them. Because they walked in a way that we got to learn to, the Christians there walked in a way that we got to learn to walk. And it's the walk of love, and love is patient, kind, long suffering. And people take advantage of you when you love. I mean, if you don't allow people, I mean, not just say, hey, come take advantage of me. But if you spend your whole life offended because somebody dissed your name or took your stuff or, you know, didn't give you a raise or something, you're not walking in love. I mean, that's what we're called to do, what's right, as Peter says.
Mm-hmm.
To be accused that we did it for the wrong reasons and suffer for it, suffer for doing what's right. And then this is what he says, and this is commendable before God. I mean, is that like the opposite American gospel?
For this you're called.
All right, it's like that. Today we're going to be preaching on, I'm going to get mine. Next week, we'll be talking about standing on the highway, pointing at cars. You're driving my car. People actually have done this. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, so here she is. She's talking. She talks about a particular letter written by an imam, which, by the way, is a leader of a mosque in Canada. And she is Canadian. And she has been some time a lone wolf voice almost in regards, not a lone wolf, but a lone voice in the Islamic community saying, mm-hmm. that we've got to do this. This thing's coming. And in there, he asked for specific things. And the first thing I would think about, you know, this is like a violation for us. It'd be the First Amendment violations. But he writes, he says, this is what we need to do. And the whole letter will be made available to you on the VFN Torch. He says, close all mosques for 3 months.
Wow.
And this is not, this is what's being said in Canada. I'm just reading the letter with what the imam's saying in Canada. Close all mosques. Mosques are where Muslims go to fellowship and focus on the teachings of Quran and Muhammad. Muhammad. Close all mosques for 3 months to have intense scrutiny of the imams, which are the leaders, and their sermons for the past 3 months. In other words, shut it down for 3 months, look at the past 3 months, and let's just find out, you know, what in the world are we saying that's causing young people to come up in Canada that wants to kill Canadians? It kind of makes sense. Anyway, so, and it's not forever. He says, this is not of abuse. It goes on to say, his letter, this is not an abuse of religious freedom. It's to ensure that that religion can be free and survive in Canada while protecting the country. The moment we begin to protect a religion over a country is the moment you don't have a country anymore. It becomes, you know, the Church of England, you know, and you get beheaded for switching faiths or whatever.
All right.
And that's why America was, you know, the Revolutionary War. So then on number two in his letter, this Elon out of Canada, he says, all Muslim organizations, including mine, he says, should submit detailed financial statements to show where their donations are coming from. And some reports are that these radical Islamic nations who have ministers, for example, Iran has a minister to do all this stuff,
right,
is funding schools in Canada and funding mosques. And reportedly the same is happening in some in America. Number three, he says, to put a moratorium on immigration from Muslim countries for a set period of time till matters here in Canada are settled. Anyone wishing to partake in armed jihad abroad or proven to be returning from such a venture needs to have their citizenship revoked and given a one-way ticket to the country of their choice as soon as possible.
Wow.
This sounds like a speech from former presidents that stood up for a country, right? Didn't it? Number four, the imam from Canada writes, Islamic schools need to be accountable, and if their syllabus shows even a minute part of hate, something of that nature, they should be shut down. In other words, if they're saying, if any school anywhere, and I think a lot of schools in America are have a dialogue against America, according to the president of King College, think of his name for a moment. He had a couple movies and books, and
Dinesh D'Souza.
Oh, yeah. And that they're just teaching against America. You'd be surprised. Interview some of the kids in school right now, the college students and the high school students. They'll tell you, they'll know more about, you know, these dictators than they know about our own country, and they speak negative about our own country. And that's government funded. And then number five, he says, in Canada, this imam in Canada, that the Islamists call for unreasonable accommodations like face coverings, special prayer spaces, Friday prayer for public schools should be taken with a pinch of salt instead of just given to these things, these demands, just given into them. There should be a body of well-informed Canadians discussing and debating these issues in light of Canadians or Canada's values and norms. In other words, we have for America, we would say, we have a constitution. When, you know, you went and fought in Iraq, you fought with all Americans who went and fought side by side of all different faiths, because it's e pluribus unum, though we're many, we're one. And so that is something that is that's a character trait that we have value we have in America. But the second we begin to lift this faith over the Constitution, then you're looking at history of other countries and what's happened in there. And what we believe is that America was founded on Judeo-Christian values, but Judeo-Christian values is a love for all mankind. You know, it's actually loving your enemy and praying for them.
Right.
It's a just thing. It's if no matter what your faith is, if you get falsely accused of a crime or accused of one, If you can't afford an attorney, America's Constitution says one will be appointed to represent you, that you're innocent before proven guilty. That doesn't say what your faith is. So all citizens have that right of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And what it looks like they're saying here is that we got to remember that in light of what's saying here in Christian faith is not in conflict with the American Constitution. And one of the things that that you start thinking about, though, you start thinking about shut down the mosque for 3 months, and you start thinking about, you know, recent statements from political leaders in America saying, you know, send me your sermons and we want to review them. And there's a big difference between people strategizing against the nation, mm-hmm. making war. I mean, jihad, I mean, one of the issues based on my understanding of what we've talked about historically, and you can see it on the VFN Torch, where the jizya tax, where it's like a, you know, a servitude type tax, and then you have the, you know, your offering that you give into the Islamic faith, that's not tax deductible like you would if you gave to another organization, another faith. For example, if you give it to a Christian church, you give your offering and you have a nonprofit status, and then that's tax deductible. Well, based on my understanding, the reason why Islam does not get a tax deductible deduction on their giving is because 1/6 of that, I believe, goes to jihad. Mm-hmm. You know, 1/6 of it goes to jihad. And so if that's what it is, and then it just boils down to what do you call jihad? So one person calls jihad a traffic jam. You know, another one calls it a bad marriage, that you're kind of just struggling your way through marriage. Another one calls it my personal struggle. Another one calls it, you know, taking someone's head off. It's war, it's battle, taking over land and territory. And she was talking about that, you know, Islam needs reformation and needed to probably redefine, you know, these different things. What you're going to have is just another wing of that whole thing. So I'm hearing, you know, what they're talking, what this Iman's suggestion is to Canada shut down the mosques for 3 years in Canada and review the previous 3 years, 3 months worth of 3 months, shut them down for 3 months. And then during that 3 months, look back at the last 3 months and see where the money's coming from. And you can follow the money. I mean, as we talked about in the previous program, is it boils down to, you know, who, what economy, whose economy are you following? Mm-hmm. And many people, they'll just do whoever provides them money. They'll just dance, you know, and this is the radical Islamic dance, you know, based on what she's saying. Mm-hmm. But the first thing you think, close down their mosque in Canada for 3 months. They're suggesting, an imam suggesting this, and she's agreeing with it. And then go back in 3 months and look at their records, including the schools. And he says, and including mine. So he's not just saying them. He's just saying us. Because we've got to find out who's against Canada. That's what mm-hmm. he's saying. Well, the first thing I think about the First Amendment. If this takes place in Canada, I mean, America, I think about the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which is your rights. And it says, Congress shall make no law representing an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech. And so, in the constitutional argument would be made in America would be you cannot inhibit the gathering, Islamic gathering at the mosques. You can't shut it down. And if somebody tried to shut down a church in America mm-hmm. and said, you know, you can't shut it down. You just can't shut it down. You cannot prohibit that from happening. But if inside that building they have a nuclear reactor and they're building a bomb, that is not constitutionally protected.
Right.
If they're practicing on how to take off someone's head, where to place the knife or the sword at the base of someone's head in alignment to something they have written down in their belief book, you don't get a tax deduction for buying your knife or removing somebody's head. That First Amendment doesn't say
fall in there.
That you can go get a sword, you can purchase it, and since you're going to use it for jihad, 1/6 of your contribution to some mosques in the world, that you get to write that sword off. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you're not covered. It's not covered.
Right.
It's, I mean, that's what people are saying.
Right. And they're trying to connect it. And they're saying, trying to connect the same thing.
Because that means that that the government is supporting enemies of the state, enemies mm-hmm. of the Constitution, enemies of the very citizens that they are meant to protect the And this is what the, this is what you swear an oath to, and you got to see these oaths. You can see them on the torch. Maybe it's related. Mm-hmm. They raised their hand. The president, Senate, House of Representatives, all across the land, new citizens. That's why we're supposed to stand up and pledge allegiance ourselves. But he says, you know, I pledge to protect the citizens of the United States from enemies, foreign and domestic.
And domestic.
So that means if somebody is in a church building, a Christian, supposedly Christian church building, a Mormon building, I don't care if it's even a tabernacle or a mosque or a coffee shop, and they're planning to harm Americans, there is no constitutional protection mm-hmm. for wanting to physically harm someone. Mm-hmm. You know, we're supposed to protect. That's the whole purpose of the Constitution, is to give you rights to protect. You have rights. And so that wouldn't be wrong if, in fact, a particular school, whatever school it was, I mean, there was, you know, there's whatever school it would be, including public schools, that are preaching or teaching, you know, doctrines of ending life, you know, killing babies, men, women, people of different beliefs, mm-hmm. Trying to push some sort of agenda that snuffs out the Constitution, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. And I believe the original word was, as long as, you know, everybody's free, as long as you, your freedom doesn't, you know, break my leg or rob from me, you know, you're free.
Right.
But the second you cut my leg off and rob me of my head that sits on my shoulders, that's a violation. I mean, that's not a free, you don't have that kind of freedom. We don't have freedom to harm folks. And so truly that wouldn't be a violation of the First Amendment rights. And, you know, nobody should be operating what we're doing anyway. If you're a Christian organization and you are a Christian, you're a church, you know, God's looking at everything you're doing. No, the government has no right and shouldn't mess with it. But just like what happened in Houston, when the mayor wanted the sermons of reportedly one of the sermons, you know, people started sending their sermons and Bibles from all around the land. I think last I heard it was over 1,000 Bibles were given in the sermons, because, you know, preachers want their sermons heard.
Yeah.
You know, they actually put it on tapes and downloads and everything. Yeah, like, please listen to my message. And so there's nothing, what's there to hide, mm-hmm. you know, in the context of that. We shouldn't be doing things that everything's in the light anyway. And if we make mistakes, and we all do, we just fix them. And we want to know those things. So we're not trying to get away with something. So it's, but we don't want government stepping over our constitutional rights either. Because what happens is it starts innocently, and next thing you know, you have the Church of England, and then you get beheaded if you switch, mm-hmm. you know, other than the Church of England, and you know, the next thing you know, you have pilgrims coming across the land, and they're getting robbed on their way over here, and only 50% of them make it to America, and out of that 50%, most of them die, and they're trying to find a place where they can just go, Jesus is Lord, you know, and follow Scripture. And so that's why our founding fathers made the Constitution like they did, just to prevent that. It's like government step away from that. But it's not because we have something to hide. It's not because also we could preach hate and you know, harm folks. And that's not what it's about. It's not. I mean, when did Jesus ever preach? I mean, he just said, you know, he said, you snakes, you hypocrites, but he was talking to the religious folks. He wasn't talking to the prostitute. Right. Mm-hmm. He said to the prostitute, you're forgiven, you know, go and sin no more. Mm-hmm. You know, he said to the fishermen, come follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. You know, he says, I'll forgive your sins and remember them no more. You know, I call you a friend because I'm sharing everything with you. I'm going to live with you. I'm going to come. Don't even worry about this life, because I am got a life after this, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. And that since I'm going away to prepare a place for you, I'm going to come back for you so that you can be with me forever, you know? And how do we get there? He says, through him. He is the way. He is the way to this place that he's preparing in the family of God. It has no way to do with political systems. But he tells us to stand up. And what we believe, that if in fact a man makes Jesus Christ the Lord of his life and becomes a disciple of Jesus Christ and begins to abide with him, many people are going to be blessed. Because when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. But when evil folks rule, the people grind their teeth. And so what if you want, we want a blessed nation, we got to say, you know, we have people that love God, that love you, that have a vision for what God has for this nation to be in leadership, because you're going to flourish. Your business is going to flourish. Mm-hmm. Your family's going to flourish. I mean, the economy's going to flourish. And it says the people rejoice. You know, and I'll end with this, but I just felt like this, you know, Rahil Raza from Canada, she just nailed it. And this iman who wrote this letter, this open letter to all of the imams in the mosques around Canada, I think we could learn a lot from this. And I encourage you to go to the VFN Torch and share this segment with folks, because, you know, we've been saying for a while, you know, where are the Muslims standing up for what's humane and that this is wrong? Well, there you go. Yeah. It's happening. And we should care about our fellow citizens in America. And what she said was, should we wait till 30,000 people are killed? What happens when you talk this way, like we're talking in our nation, being politically correct? She says, 9/11 will happen. So it's time for us to stand up and take some advice. And I think she's got some great wisdom here. Dear Lord, save our country. Bring us into sanity. Forgive us, Lord, for how we're treating Israel. Make sure you join us on next program. You won't believe what our president's and White House is saying about the prime minister and how we have to react to that in a biblical way to make sure that we don't suffer for that. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.